I'm Nicole.
And I'm Gina.
We are two dietitian mamas with master's degrees in nutrition, but not motherhood.
Join us on our journeys raising two kids and working hard to keep our family and ourselves healthy and well.
Whether you're in your car or slumped on the couch with a glass of wine, welcome to the Dietitian's Dish podcast.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Dietitian's Dish podcast. I'm Gina.
And I'm Nicole.
And today we are dishing about salt, sodium, and how they are a part of a healthy diet. And before we dive into our topic, as always, we're just going to do a little brief catch up because in reality, Nicole, the two of us have not recorded a podcast together since I think January 18th.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Is that right?
Not from a lack of trying. Probably.
Exactly. Yeah, we've already actually recorded this podcast once, but had some issues, as we've already said.
We and recorded the whole damn thing, Gina. The whole damn thing.
I feel like I'm going to say it again. It's like an episode of Groundhog Day, which we said when we recorded last time. And you said you've never seen the movie. And I was like, gasp, that's crazy. But yeah, we recorded the eating disorder episode three times and never posted it. It's coming in May. Don't you worry, everyone. And then we recorded this one once already and didn't post it. But I really think we are on the right track now. We did end up getting a podcast posted of our husbands, which still needed a little bit of work because I recorded in a very echoey room, which my bad. And but I think we're on the right track. I think this is it. This is going to be the one.
Oh my gosh. So what month did this all begin? I don't even remember.
You mean the actual podcast?
I mean,
or the issues?
Like, when did we actually start podcasting? Because we've always had issues.
Yeah. I feel like we had our first post in December around Christmas.
But I feel like we had months of issues before we posted something.
Oh, yes, we did. I think we actually started it in, I want to say, September, August.
And it is now nearly March.
Yeah.
We're resilient. We're resilient people, Gina.
Oh my gosh. There were tons of times when I wanted to give up on this. And then I was like, I mean, how many podcasts are there? A million. There's so, if they can do it, I mean, I think we can do it. So
we're not 100% sure yet, but we think we can.
We're still not sure. We're pretty sure. And it's not without help. I mean, we did find someone who helped us tremendously. We've had, what, three people help us throughout the 6 months we've been doing this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not a free activity either. So
right. And that's the hard part too. It's like blogging. I've always paid for help with my blog because I'm just not an IT person. But it's just hard when you're not – I'm not making any money on my blog because I just don't do it that often. It's just really a fun hobby for me.
Yeah.
So it's just really hard to – I mean, one of my goals this year was financial. I think we went over that on one of our podcasts. And here I am, you know, shelling out money left and right for a podcast for not even getting money for. And same with my blog. But it's okay. Hobbies cost money. So right now it's a hobby. Maybe one day it will actually be – I don't know. We'll make some money on it.
But you're a new internet provider because you had to get a new internet provider to podcast. It's cheaper, right?
So it was a little bit cheaper. It ended up being about $10 less. But I think, and this is how I feel like most internet companies work, we just started with them, so they gave us the best deal.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure in the next 2 years, it will increase just like my last one did. And I'm just hoping – because when we had AT&T at first, and when we first got it, it was amazing. I mean, I had bars probably two houses down from our house. And then it just got worse and worse and worse and worse. And I just hope that doesn't happen with this one. But now I know how to run that speed test, so I'm really hoping I can be on top of it and I'll call them and do my thing if I need to.
Too funny.
Okay, so enough with the boring stuff and the podcast nightmare. What's been new with you, Nicole?
Okay, so this past week I presented my final project for my 18-month leadership cohort through our health system, and I was the last one of the day. There were 16 presentations. I was dead last, and in my typical – you know this about me, Gina. I'm like a last-minute kind of person.
Right
in the nick of time kind of stuff, just totally wing it, and it usually works out okay. So I mean, obviously I've worked on this project for like 18 months. I knew my stuff. I was really proud of the results. My team did a great job. And then it, just as soon as the person before me finished, I like ripped out into this crazy sweat. My palms were like dripping sweat onto the floor. I was just, I turned into a hot mess. And I started speaking really fast. And as soon as I finished my presentation, I was like, you talked way too fast, Nicole, but hopefully it was okay. So I felt like I knew my shit. I could have just slowed down. And I got feedback from everyone. That was kind of part of the gig, was you had to give everyone feedback, like written feedback. And mm-hmm. that was really my only critique, was just to slow down. And it wasn't on every, it was like on a handful, two or three. So I was like, okay, I probably talked fast. But I felt like overall I did a pretty good job. So that's kind of like off my plate. A week ago Friday, I finished all my assignments for the cohort. And oh my gosh, I feel like I just got like a second master's. So I'm really happy about that. So that's kind of done. We have our formal graduation on March 6th. And we were told men need to be in ties and women need to be in dresses. So I promptly got on Amazon and figured that out. And
That's weird to me. What if you don't want to wear a dress? What if some women don't like wearing dresses? Anyway, that's
true. I completely agree. I think they just really want it to be a nice event. So anyway, I'm excited.
That's great.
Yeah. And then we have some visitors. So my parents are here this weekend, and then next weekend, my best friend's coming. So we're normally we only have visitors to Michigan in summer. So we're pretty jazzed that somebody wants to come to Michigan in February or March. So
Your parents live in near Chicago, right?
Yeah. They're about.
So, I mean, they're used to it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
They are. I feel like after the holidays, people just kind of hunker down and don't really travel a whole lot. So we haven't seen anybody in a while. So Cam is 2. Happy birthday to Cameron.
Cameron turned 2. It's crazy. And he probably thinks, I mean, obviously he's young. He doesn't really get it. So we woke him up on his birthday and saying happy birthday pretty much all day long. And then Paige still talked about his birthday up until yesterday when we had his party because she was so excited. It was a party that started off as just – it was just going to be my mom and my mother-in-law because I didn't want to really do a party for him. I mean, I hate to say it, but winter birthdays, they usually get the shaft. I was one of them. But it's just not as fun. What are we going to do? I mean – and plus, he's 2. I didn't really want to spend a bunch of money and do anything big. So it was just going to be my mom and my mother-in-law. Ended up being like 15 people. Okay, that's probably an exaggeration. I think it was like 11 people in our small house. And I don't think everyone left until about 10 o'clock last night. And the kids, of course, didn't go to bed till 10, 10:30. And then last night around 12 o'clock, Paige woke up and vomited.
Oh, no.
And I know. So I remember a little sign on the daycare door that said that there was a stomach bug going around. So, of course, that's the first thing that popped in my mind. But I also noticed that she was showing some signs of GERD, which we'll do a podcast about it. But she has GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, like heartburn, but mm-hmm. a more serious form of that. And from her 2-year birthday until she was about 3, she threw up probably once a month. And then I realized this is not normal. So I got her tested and found out she had GERD. That's what this throw up was like. And just the whole sequence of events last night was very much like her GERD was aggravated again, which kind of bothers me because she's still taking medicine for it. So I'm not sure if it was the excitement of the day. I mean, she has been excited about that party last night for weeks. So maybe that aggravated her nervous system and it just made the GERD act up. I also gave her blueberries yesterday in her lunch, which has always been a trigger for her. Not to say that every time she eats blueberries, she throws up, but oftentimes before she was on medicine, when she ate berries of any type, that's when she would throw up.
What about Did she have chocolate yesterday?
So I was thinking about that too. So not really. She doesn't really eat a lot of chocolate. She likes it, but she much prefers just like sugary candy, like sweet tarts or, you know, lollipops, which I'm the opposite. But I think when I was a kid, I was the same way. She had some chocolate in her milk, but I don't even think – she didn't even eat that. She didn't even drink milk last night. So no, it wasn't chocolate. I mean, it's – so I'm almost 100% sure that it's not a stomach bug. And then I was thinking, I started getting really nervous because last night, this is going to sound real weird, but she stuck her tongue out and wanted me to touch my tongue to her tongue. Okay, I know that's weird, but I did it. And then, of course, right when she started throwing up, I was like, oh shit, I touched her tongue with my tongue. Because, you know, it's so contagious. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever been in that situation where one of you gets sick and then literally within an hour, the next person gets sick and then the next person gets sick. And So I started having a little bit of anxiety about that, but I'm pretty sure it was GERD. And she seems to be fine this morning. She was up at 6 a.m., which is crazy because she probably didn't sleep at all last night. But you know how kids are. Yeah. So anyway, but on a good note, I'm going to, speaking of presentations, I'm presenting in Iowa this coming weekend at a conference for my work. It's called the National Association of College and University Food Service. I'm doing what I thought was going to be it went from a 60-minute presentation to a 30-minute presentation, and now we only have 20 minutes.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So I'm going with a coworker of mine, and we've been practicing for a while, and we've been trying to cut it down to 30 minutes, and now we recently found out we have to cut it down to 20 minutes. So speaking of talking fast, I mean, we will be, I'm sure, up there just flying through these slides, and I hope we'll be fine. I know we'll be fine, but I just don't want the presentation to be useless because we're going so fast and people aren't able to absorb the information. But it'll be fine. I'm glad that we're doing it. I just wish we had a little bit more time, but
yeah,
it'll be fine.
That's exciting.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So,
okay, what's your presentation on?
Oh, it's so boring, Nicole. It's the presentation. We did this empathy training in our university. So we brought in all of our full-time staff, and this is in dining services, and we assigned them a food allergy. And we had a whole spread of food for them to choose from, but they could only eat foods that were free of their allergen that they were assigned.
Oh.
Sort of. So it was sort of just putting them, giving them like a little glimpse of what it's like to have a food allergy. And it was our way of kind of helping to build empathy in our full-time staff, empathy for those who have food allergies. And it was really well received. I think that they really liked it. And a lot of universities have reached out to us because they want to do something similar. So we thought we'd give them a glimpse of how we did it and what we did. It could easily be an hour presentation because we're really passionate about it and we're really excited to share it. But we only get 20 minutes. But yeah.
Yeah, that is not boring at all. Like how you're,
it's not boring. I shouldn't say that. I think it probably is boring for some people. I mean, I think people in the food service are all about it. And really, a lot of people, you know, in America are probably excited about it because food allergies are so prevalent now. I feel like everyone should have some type of empathy training with regards to food allergies. And it's very different from sympathy. I don't want them to feel bad for those with allergies. I want them to just have a better understanding. Mm-hmm. There's a quote, you know, we don't want them to feel bad for I can't even think of the quote. We have it in our it's not sympathy, it's empathy, and there's a big difference, and we make that very clear in our presentation. We just want those food service workers to see why it's important to take that extra time to make that allergen safe meal. And again, I think it's important for everyone to have it. So you're right, it's not boring. I shouldn't say that.
You've just practiced it too many times.
I think I'm so sick of it at this point. It's boring to me. Exactly.
This is the difference between you and I. You practice like crazy and it's going to be perfect. I practice none at all. I get up in front of senior leadership and just like talk too fast.
I don't even know how you would do that. I always practice. And I also have someone else that I'm presenting with. So, you know, she also pushed me to practice. So that was a good motivator as well because we have to get our, you know, slides right. Who's doing what? So we had no choice. We had to practice. Since it's a co-presentation.
You know, there's people like me who get paired with people like me, and it always
is a disaster.
It's happened before. I don't think it was a total disaster, but it could have been better. Let's put it that way.
Right.
Too funny. All right, let's hop in.
Okay.
So I think the topic of today and salt came from you and I sharing our appreciation, even our love for salt. And we thought we should really do a podcast topic about that. Mm-hmm. And so really, just to start, today's topic pertains to maintaining health that is free of chronic disease, such as hypertension, high blood pressure, kidney disease, congestive heart failure, or COPD. And what we do know about salt is there is a dose-dependent relationship between salt and blood pressure. So the more salt you intake, the higher your blood pressure has the potential to go. So there is definitely a dose-dependent relationship there. There's no knocking that. Research supports a sodium-restricted diet for those with hypertension, and reducing sodium content can lower blood pressure in as soon as 1 week. Also of note, which I found this fascinating, 90% of adults will develop hypertension in their lifetime. So that's huge. I mean, this is something that I feel like we all need to be in the know about. That said, I think we have some great tips today on how to keep your diet sodium conscious without necessarily giving up all the flavor. And so at a most basic level, sodium is an essential mineral. So it's not a vitamin, it's a mineral that helps the body maintain proper fluid balance, acid-base balance, and it actually helps our muscles to work. So sodium and potassium work in unison to even, like right now I'm talking with my hands even though I'm sitting in my bedroom alone. Like even that motion is using sodium and potassium to constrict muscle. And so in the body at a very cellular level, it does really cool stuff. And so sodium chloride is the chemical name for salt or table salt. And it is required to be on the nutrition facts label. I think we probably all know that. However, we see it often used with other names. So, but salt itself is 40% sodium and 60% chloride. And it obviously provides tons of flavor. It is a preservative. So before refrigeration, even we would, you know, heavily salt our meats to preserve them. Even things today are still salted. I mean, things like raisins that have salt added to them last longer. They stay softer longer. Salt is also a binder and a stabilizer in food. So when we think of processed foods, I mean, think of a can of Chef Boyardee or something like that. Why can those noodles stay in a can for years on end in a moist environment and come out anything short of congealed mass of whatever it once was? I mean, salt is such a huge part of the way we make food shelf stable, good for long periods of time. And there's a beauty and a curse in that. And so I think we have to be conscious of that. So Americans in general consume about 35 to 3,600 milligrams of sodium each day, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And it's recommended that we only consume about 2,300. And for kids, that's as low as about 1,500, 2,300. When older kids, it goes a little bit higher, but children is going to be less because their calorie intake is less.
Right, right. And just I think it's important to note here, 2,300 milligrams, to put it into perspective, is actually a teaspoon of salt. Yep. Exactly. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Of table salt.
Of table salt. Correct.
Yep. And so, yeah, that's not a lot. And I know when we recorded this podcast the first time, I was talking about my previous role in foods in hospital nutrition services. And when I was hired into that job, I was handed over hospital menus that were well over 5,000 milligrams of sodium per day for a cardiac diet.
I mean, 5,000 is high for the general public.
It was
And then ridiculous. For a cardiac diet, I mean, that is just malpractice. Right? That's terrible.
I won't say which institution this was.
Yeah. Don't name it. Yeah.
And it was a problem. They recognized it as a problem. But what it came down to is they were using prepared foods and ready serve foods. There was no cooking involved in the menus. And so that was a huge change for the team and one that was not well understood, but, you know, with some education, kind of like your empathy training, once they kind of understand, you know, we have to take this, cut it in half, and then still reduce by 30%.
Right. Like, oh my gosh.
We're talking leaps and bounds here, people. We're not talking, I mean, you cannot purchase foods to go with a cardiac diet that are going to be 100% ready to serve. So, yeah. I don't know. So, salt is an issue for some people. However, some it's not. So, about half of adults, humans, are what's called salt sensitive. And so we see that's really that dose dependent relationship. So as their sodium intake goes up, their blood pressure will go up as well. And I mean, that just is what it is. And you notice this with people like retaining salt, retaining water, just kind of their fluid balance is just a little more sensitive than other people. Do you notice that in yourself at all? Like your rings getting tighter or?
I think I do. Yeah. So, I mean, water, I remember learning about this in, I don't know, microbiology class, that water follows salt. So literally when you consume a high sodium diet, like the water in your body just kind of morphs into that sodium and holds on to it I'm very much simplifying this explanation, but yeah. So if you eat a really high sodium diet at night and then go to bed, like typically what happens with me, I'll wake up and I won't be able to get my ring on. Because it's kind of just maybe happens overnight where I'm just retaining more water because I ate all that salt. And yeah, I definitely notice that for sure.
Yeah. I think what you and I really want to get across today is that it's not necessarily salt that's the problem, but maybe the composition of processed foods in the diet, fast foods, convenience foods, restaurant foods, those are all going to just be higher in sodium. And so when you consider the amount of salt that goes into a homemade meal, you know, like we've talked, like we salt our roasted vegetables, you and I both, like that's just something that we do. And a lot of times people will say, oh my gosh, you use salt? Like you're a dietitian. And it's like, well, yeah, of course I use salt on certain things. Yeah. I was actually talking about this with my mom last night, what foods she feels absolutely need salt. I was actually going to have her hop on the podcast, but she was late getting up and she had not caffeinated properly for that. So
ditto, actually. Yeah. I totally slept in this morning. I feel so bad. I woke up at like 8 o'clock and I'm like, oh, by the way, Nick, I had to podcast in 30 minutes. See ya.
Oh, so he got up with Paige at 6?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Oh, I'm lucky. He doesn't, Nick. I don't know. He says he doesn't need that much sleep. And I'm like, I think you need more sleep than you think. I don't know. I feel bad. I think he needs to get more sleep, but I mean, he took one for the team. So
that would never happen in my life. So I'm just insanely jealous. Oh, jeez. Mark was at the casino until like one. He goes like once a month with his buddy. He rolled in at, I don't know what time, one something. Didn't put the dog in her room. She crapped on the carpet. And then I had to kick him out of the bedroom so I could podcast. I'm like, this is a literal shit show. So,
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And dietitians, we're those people who go from talking about poop and vomiting straight back to food without missing a beat.
No big deal.
No biggie. On we go.
Okay, so your mom couldn't caffeinate enough to get on the podcast.
She couldn't caffeinate enough. But we were just talking kind of, and everybody has different preferences. And I think you have a lot more background in this, but just how, and I know we have some show notes on this, how taste buds work and really how that preference for salt or kind of where on the spectrum of saltiness people really gravitate towards. And it's very individualized.
Yeah, so there's – we're going to put this in the show notes, but a book that I read a few years ago when I had time to read this entire giant monster, it's called Taste What You're Missing, and it's by Barb Stuckey. Oh my gosh, it was such a good book, but I'm just going to read one line from the book. It says, when you add salt, something curious happens. Salt acts as something of a taste superhero, thwarting the bad guys while assisting the good guys. When you add salt to food, it suppresses bad taste, such as bitter or sour. But salt isn't as punitive to the good taste of sweet and savory. Salt releases the desirable flavors from suppression by the bitter or sour tastes, like Superman freeing Lois Lane from Lex Luthor. The result of this salt superheroism is that a pinch of salt can make bad things taste less bad and good things taste better. And I always think about, have you ever put salt on watermelon?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I haven't either. But I hear it's a big thing that people do. They put salt on watermelon. I mean, I've heard it before. I've just never done it. And it brings out the sweet taste of watermelon. It makes a sweet, juicy watermelon taste even better because it brings out those good tastes and then it gets rid of the bad taste. Not that there's a bad taste in watermelon, but I think about Brussels sprouts. My kids love roasted Brussels sprouts. If I serve them roasted Brussels sprouts without salt on them, I just don't think that they would be as into it.
They might throw them at you.
Yeah, exactly. They'd probably put it in their mouth, chew it up, and spit it out, which they've done before. And putting that salt on there actually kind of helps to get rid of that bitter taste. Not totally, but kind of bringing it to a maintainable level is how I interpret it. So salt is our friends.
When you were talking about salt and watermelon, all I kept thinking about was and still thinking about is salted caramel.
Oh, gosh. Like, exactly. Yes.
Like that coarse salt on – oh, so good.
Yeah, they make those little like square caramels with the sea salt on top. And, I mean, it's the best thing ever because it's better than regular caramel because that salt actually intensifies that sweet flavor. Oh, yeah, it is so good.
I mean, I think even – I would have to verify this, but if you looked at the label of, like, a Hershey chocolate or Godiva chocolate, something, I bet there's salt added to it. I can say with almost near certainty there's salt added.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Salt is in just about everything, even in, like, minute amounts. I mean, because it does so much. When I took my food science class, I'm sure you remember this too, we would do some tests with things with salt and then without salt, like what happened. Even if we made a loaf of bread that maybe called for, you know, a teaspoon of salt in the whole loaf, if you didn't add the salt, how much of a difference it made. I mean, it is what do they call it? A taste bud superhero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people love it. It's absolutely true. I mean, I certainly do. So, Gina, I want to just talk a little bit about, like, some of the foods in the American diet that may be highest in sodium. Not to demonize these by any means, but just to raise awareness. So certainly frozen meals, pizzas, snack foods, canned goods, definitely, although they are now readily available in no salt added and low sodium varieties. Beverages, especially tomato and vegetable juice, deli meats and processed meats such as bacons and sausage. So when I'm teaching like group education classes and we get to the section on just kind of choosing healthier proteins that may be lower in salt, or are lower in salt, I always say, when you buy a package of lunch meat that, you know, the vacuum sealed stuff that's like, you know, in a plastic container, it has an expiration date like 3 months in the future. I mean, why is your turkey okay in July that you buy today?
Yeah.
I mean, that is really gross to think about. I mean, and as a consumer, you go, sweet, I don't have to eat this today, tomorrow, or even next month or the following month. I've got some time to not waste this. Whereas if you buy it from the deli counter, like the meat counter, that's going to be shady business in like less than a week. So there is less salt. I mean, there's still salt in those meats. They're definitely processed. But the amount of sodium is far, far less. So that's usually a good telltale way of, before even flipping over the label, think, how long into the future could I eat this food and it's still okay? I'll pick on ramen noodles. If you buy ramen noodles today, you can eat them after the apocalypse and everything's good. I'm just kidding.
No, I'm sure that's true.
Salt is a preservative. It is. And so that's just one way to think of it. And things that are shelf stable as well. So gravy. I mean, you would buy that from the shelf and you flip it over and it's packed with sodium. So, yeah. Anything you want to add to that?
Well, there's some really good resources out there. I mean, I think a lot of that is obvious. I mean, we know where salt comes in our diet. And unfortunately, and I think you mentioned this the first time we recorded this, you read to me, I really do wish that there was better legislation and rules regulating our food supply. I really think here is where it's important. I wish I could just go to the store and pick out foods for myself, my family, my kids, and not have to worry about how much sodium is in the food. I don't want to have to think about I'm picking really up and putting in the cart. Okay. Yeah.
I got to find it.
And I think it's in the show notes, right?
I don't know if the quote is.
Okay. Well, I am one of those people that thinks that there needs to be more regulation over the amount of sodium in our processed foods. I don't think that so many foods are so easy to grab and throw in our cart. But we don't want to have to look at salt and fat and calories. There's already so much to think about. The last thing we want to think about is sodium. So I wish there was better regulation there. Personally, I don't even like to think about it when I put things in the cart, especially for my kids. I mean, I'm thinking about what you just said about deli meat. I mean, I get them hot dogs all the time. Now, I buy the turkey ones and I buy the ones that are nitrate free because nitrates and nitrites have been linked to cancer. But not to say that they're terrible. I mean, I'm sure they still get some in their diets. And there are some that naturally occur as well. But they are preservatives and they are thrown into so many foods. So I wish there was better regulation on our food supply, similar to other countries like in Europe. I just think we're really far behind when it comes to that. And I wish that I could just put foods in my cart and know that they are at a certain level of sodium that is actually not detrimental to our health. Gosh, that would be a dream, wouldn't it?
Yeah, the article was amazing. I found this very interesting as well, just because it's a totally different spin on the topic. But it says, current efforts to reduce sodium intake in our food supply are strongly justified by the way of population-based efforts to lower excessive sodium consumption versus lowering the sodium recommendations. Basically, mm-hmm. lowering the recommendation has not improved adherence to the recommendation of 2,300 milligrams a day. Rather, right. the foundation of food preparation in a way that supports a healthful sodium intake is important. Like you said, why wouldn't it be? It would be amazing if food companies just had to adhere to this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
go ahead. Crazy. No. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, it's – yeah. You tell the Americans to lower your sodium intake to 1,500 to 2,300 milligrams. To the lay public, that doesn't really – you think to yourself, okay, well, you guys are telling me this, so I'm hoping that our food supply supports that. It should. Our food supply should support that. But in reality, it does not. Now, they're getting better at bringing on, like you said, low-sodium versions, which low-sodium means 140 milligrams or less sodium, or no-salt-added versions or reduced sodium, which is 50% less than the original. But still, the lay consumer doesn't know what to do with that information. Mm-hmm. But I think that's where I don't want this podcast to be about how stressful it is to lower the sodium in our diets. I think what I like to focus on is, for me and my kids, I'm thinking to myself, I don't think as much about salt as I do about potassium. Mm-hmm. Not that I look at potassium.
Wait, I want to say one thing before we get to potassium.
Yeah. Okay, nope, go ahead.
This is my annoyance with my blog. So a lot – I'm a simple cook. I like everything in one pot. I want my meat, my vegetables, whatever. Everything's kind of all together. That's really more often than not the way that I cook. And so when I post a recipe on my blog, which I do all the nutrition analysis myself, even if I am just like reposting a recipe almost word for word, even if it's from a credible source, I still calculate the nutrition information. And mm-hmm. so it is not uncommon that an entree comes to, let's say, 1,000 milligrams. Like, that is not uncommon. And people freak out. They're like, you're a dietitian. How could you ever eat 1,000 milligrams? And my point is, and I say this to my patients too, when they are just, you know, they're going through fast food, for example. And this actually happened. I had a patient, he was on dialysis, you know, blood pressure still sky high. I mean, he had everything going on, diabetic. And he was like, well, I'm not going to eat a frozen entree. I mean, they're so high in salt. And yet he was going through the KFC drive-through twice a day, every day.
Oh my gosh.
And so our entire session was looking up the KFC menu to see how his three-piece chicken with a biscuit stacked up sodium-wise to a frozen entree. And he was like mind blown. I mean, he had never thought to really do that. He just was picking up that frozen entree, even the healthier options still mm-hmm. have a lot of sodium, but that's really your meal. And so my point is, people are not picking up the bread, calculating that. The mustard, calculating, you know, they're not doing all the tabulation to find out how much sodium is actually in a meal that they're consuming. They're looking at each individual source, and the sum is greater than the parts, people. So I think that's just one thing to give caution to. When you're consider what it is that you're getting for that sodium amount. So
well, and like what you said with your blog, I mean, it is typically. For most people, either lunch or dinner is your biggest meal. So 1,000 milligrams of sodium in lunch or dinner, if you look at your whole diet as a whole, you know, maybe you have breakfast with 500 milligrams and you have a lunch with 500 milligrams and then maybe a couple snacks here and there, you can easily meet that recommendation of less than 2,300 milligrams.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to look at – you can't, like, look at your diet as one meal. You have to look at it as a whole. It's okay to eat a meal that's 1,000 milligrams of sodium as long as you are also watching about how much sodium you're getting the rest of your day. And it can easily fit. And like you said, I mean, if you look at sodium amounts in fast food meals or restaurant meals, it could easily reach 2,000 milligrams. Oh, a day's worth, I've seen before. But beyond a day's worth.
I mean, the body looks at averages. And so I know for sure I go over and we will share what our daily intakes kind of calculated out too here mm-hmm. in a little bit, but the body looks at averages, so it's very possible that on the weekends you may be a little bit higher, and during the week, I know that's kind of how your life and my life go, Gina. We're just more social on the weekends, and with that comes more eating out and more things like that. And so I think that's perfectly appropriate to That's yeah. life.
Agreed. That's agreed. Life.
So yeah, hopping into potassium. Do you teach the DASH diet at all in your?
I do not, but it is yeah, because I don't really do much education as far as you know diets and all that. But I think the DASH is one of my favorites. If I were to say I like a diet, that would be it.
Yeah.
So, and it's the one that always ranks highest with the Mediterranean diet, right? Like every year they come out with the top five best diets, and it's almost always the DASH diet and the Mediterranean diet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nothing new. I actually so DASH stands for Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension, and the emphasis is on fruits and vegetables and and whole food sources of legumes, grains. What was that, Paige or Cameron?
Did you hear that?
I did.
Oh, my gosh. That was Paige.
Too funny. Hi, Paige. that's really the foundation is high fiber, whole foods, and lots of potassium. And so some good sources of potassium. People always think about bananas. And I worked in a dialysis clinic for a couple years, and I had these just, like, riddled through my brain. So, yes, definitely.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Bananas, oranges, basically anything orange. So you think sweet potatoes, potatoes in general, they're not orange, but
salmon,
cantaloupe, apricots, grapefruit, dried fruit, all of those. Dairy even has quite a bit of potassium in it.
Yep.
Did I say
avocado?
Avocado, yes. Spinach, broccoli, mushrooms, peas. I mean, it's edamame, tomato paste. Do your kids like edamame?
It's funny that you asked that. I almost bought a little thing of the frozen edamame the other day, and I always, when I buy my kids things, I think to myself, if they don't eat it, will I eat this? I do love edamame, but it gives me the worst gas ever because it's soy and it's a bean. And so I don't know. They probably would. I'm going to have to try it sometime.
Oh, my kids love it. With salt.
Of course. Of course with salt. Yes.
Here we go. So
otherwise, it's just like starchy mass in your mouth. Ugh. Yeah.
I don't fully agree. I like edamame. I'll add it to
But you add salt to it, right?
If it's in the pod, for sure. If it's out of the pod, less.
You don't
salt.
Need it. Okay.
Less.
That's fair.
I'll say. Cucumbers, watermelon. We were talking about coconut water, beans.
Beans are a great one.
Jumped around my list there. Yeah, and all beans. So, black beans, white beans. Beans. So as we increasing our potassium is by nature going to increase the number of whole foods in our diet. And that not the potassium not only kind of counteracts the sodium, but it's also displacing processed foods in the diet. So as your intake of fruits and vegetables go up, because they're extremely filling, high in fiber, high water content, and of course, very nutrient dense with the vitamins and minerals, phytonutrients, all of those things, it's going to just displace everything else. If we're eating,
right?
I mean, there's so many different recommendations for fruits and vegetables, but DASH diet promotes 7 to 10 servings of fruits and vegetables.
Fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that. That's what I always use as my recommendation to everyone, 7 to 10. And I think that we heard that on the last episode with Nick. Mm-hmm. I asked him how many servings, and I think I said like 7 to 9, but that's half cup servings. Yeah.
His intake is impressive.
He is pretty good. Now, granted, he also eats a lot of crap. I mean, I was going through my Giant Eagle previously purchased items, and I noticed yesterday for lunch he had a croissant with a croissant sandwich with chicken salad and then a buffalo, like a blue cheese buffalo wrap with fried chicken for lunch. So, yes, he does. I mean, I was like, did you eat both of those? He's like, yeah, I took a bite of the chicken salad, but it wasn't that good, so I didn't eat it. I was like, okay. Anyway. So, yes, he does get a good amount of fruits and vegetables, which is why I don't worry too much about his, sodium intake. I mean, I still think about it, but I feel like it's offset by the amount of fruits and vegetables that he eats. So, yeah. Generally speaking.
That's impressive. It really is. Yeah. And potassium has been somewhat of a mystery in food labeling. No, not somewhat. It's been a complete mystery in food labeling because potassium has not been on the label. But it will be. It will be. We tried figuring out what year that was going to be, and I'm sure Dr. Google could tell us pretty easily. But we thought it might be this year.
I feel like it's either this year or next year. It's either 2019 or 2020 that the new label's going to come out. Yeah, it's already started fading in slowly with other companies. I've seen it on some companies that are already using it because why not?
My ice cream, which I never eat ice cream, but I did this week, and I saw that the serving size had changed to 2/3 cup. And I was like, it's happening already. The new labeling stuff is rolling out. So I was so excited.
But so wait a second. So what does that have to do with serving size? So they change your serving size from a half to a 2/3?
Correct. So,
but that's a good thing, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, no, a good. It's happening already. Like, woohoo! This is actually a serving that I'm eating now.
Okay, so they're making the serving more realistic.
Correct. That was right. A huge push in the new rollout of of the food labels is make because who? I mean, I don't eat. I just need a couple bites of ice cream, so I wasn't probably that much above a half a cup when I scoop it out. But half the same a cup way. Is not a lot of ice cream.
Right, right.
2/3 is probably more realistic.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But yeah, we're going to start to see potassium and added sugars I've started to see as well.
I love that. Love that.
Love it.
So the recommendation for potassium is 4,700 milligrams. So when we look at the label, though, here's what I don't like about it. Because correct me if I'm wrong. It's just going to say percentage of potassium. It's not going to actually give milligrams. Is that
That's
right?
That's my understanding. Yep.
Yeah, which I kind of don't like that. I wish they would tell you how many milligrams it is. But since you know the recommendation is 4,700, if it's 10% of your potassium, that's 470 milligrams. So, I mean, you can do the math, but it would be nice if they would do it for you. But anyway.
Yeah, and anything with 20% or more of your daily values. So if it were 20% that it listed for potassium, that would be a high potassium food. And then what is a good source? Is it 10?
I think good source is 10, yes. Good source is 10. 20% is great or high. Yes. Okay. Excellent.
Excellent.
An excellent source.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think all fruits and vegetables have potassium in them. I don't think any are void of potassium completely. So I could be wrong on that. But there's definitely higher sources that we just went over. But including more of those is a nice way to offset sodium intake as well as to displace processed foods in the diet. So I love it.
I agree. And that's, again, what I always say to myself when I'm feeding my kids. I do give them – like, I'll give them chicken nuggets on a plate, and maybe 3 chicken nuggets. And I will always pair that with some type of a fruit or vegetable and a glass of milk. So to me, I think to myself, okay, well, it's a higher sodium entree or protein, but at least they're sort of offsetting it with their higher in potassium, fruits, vegetables, dairy. Yeah. And I do tend to always – I don't force them to eat their vegetables necessarily because I don't want them to hate them. But I do always require that they finish their milk for a couple of reasons. First, potassium. And second, protein and calories. My kids just don't eat that much. So milk is a good source of calories for them. So that's one thing I kind of do force upon them in the best and kindest way. And I don't give them a whole lot. It's usually like a half a cup to 3/4 cup depending on the day.
Do they do soy milk or cow's milk?
Nope, they do cow's milk. Okay. We do still the whole – we do the Fairlife, which is higher in calories and protein, whole milk.
That stuff is so good. Oh, my gosh.
It is really good.
Their chocolate milk was a little bit of an addiction of mine during pregnancy.
Oh, I think I remember you saying that. So I don't. Good. Or maybe my coworker was saying that. Someone was telling me that. I've never had it. It looks – I mean, I'm sure it's delicious. The milk itself is good. I can't imagine if it had chocolate in it, it would be delicious as well.
You know, you would think dietitians would turn each other on to, like – you know, really healthy stuff. But no, it was my friend, my dietitian friend at work was like, you have to try this chocolate milk. She was pregnant too. I was like, oh, you devil. This is amazing.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Okay. And one quick little tidbit on sweat. And so kind of like everything, yeah, now we're moving to sweat, another nice bodily function. But, you know, thinking back to sodium being involved in the fluid-based balance, some people, unlike yourself, sweat a lot, like myself.
Yeah, and, I like barely sweat. Yeah.
So yesterday I played an hour and a half of tennis, and it was basically drill and play for an hour and then doubles for a half hour. I sweat a ton. And then I came home and immediately hopped on the Peloton and did a 45-minute PR. I mean, I killed it. So,
damn, girl.
I know. That's like, what is that? 2 hours and 15 minutes of exercise?
Jeez.
I mean, there
impressive.
Is. Impressive. I was dehydrated all day. Like, I couldn't get enough water in because I'm not as good about drinking water as I should be during exercise, especially during tennis because it's not convenient at all. Like, if I'm on the treadmill or something, I feel like it's right there. But anyway, The high rates of sweat rates in athletes do result in a loss of both fluid and sodium. So I can even remember the first time both times I did a marathon or even a half marathon. I mean, I looked like a salt lick. I mean, you could just like rub it off me and it just, I mean, it was like getting in my eyes. It was horrible. You could physically see the salt just dried and crusted on my skin when I was done running.
Yeah.
It was just crazy. And so there is a significant individual variation there. But I think people probably know whether they're heavy sweaters or not. And two, what is your job? I mean, I sweat a lot during exercise, but at work, I sit all damn day. I mean, I barely move. And so what do you do during work? A manual laborer working, you know, 8 to 12 hour shifts, they're going to lose 5,000-6,000 milligrams a day of sodium through sweat.
Wow. Wow. That is significant.
I didn't come up with that number. That's from research. So sure. That kind of blows my mind as well. But that's where, you know, people like myself don't need like a Gatorade type supplement because I certainly don't need the calories. But mm-hmm. I probably do need a little bit of additional sodium. And so I give myself a little. That's why I salt my Brussels sprouts.
Exactly.
And feel no shame. But sweat is a piece of it. It's a piece of the puzzle.
I think that there is a place in our diets for, you know, the calorie or the sugar-free Gatorade or the light Gatorade mm-hmm. or whatever it is. They've got like salt supplements, those little squeeze pouches. You don't need to get a bunch of calories with it. You're just replacing your salt. Mm-hmm. So someone like who does manual labor all day but is still maybe on the overweight side and doesn't need excess calories but needs to replace their sweat, there are those supplements. The little squeezies, the little chewies, the drinks that they can take in without getting a bunch of sugar and
salt-rimmed margaritas.
Oh yeah, perfect. Yeah, go out for happy hour after the job, and it has to be salt-rimmed. Yesterday was National Margarita Day.
Oh, I missed it.
Yeah, yeah.
I need a rain check. That might be today.
Yeah.
What are
there you go.
For?
Why not?
Oh my goodness.
Okay, so since we are already at like an hour, I mean, I feel like we can go on about this forever. Let's talk about.
Okay, we're at 47 minutes.
Okay, not bad. So should we talk about I want to talk about our intake of sodium and then maybe just, end with just a few just tips, general tips that our listeners can leave with after listening today. So sure. let's look at our diets.
Yeah. So when we decided we were going to do this episode, I said, "Hey, Gina, send me your like a food log for the day," and you did. And so here's what I found that day, and this is probably a month ago now, but it's okay.
This was last year.
Your sodium intake for the day, it was August. Your sodium was 2450 for the day.
Okay.
So you were technically over recommendations, and your diet for the day was 1,807 calories, 115 grams of carbohydrate. I'm so impressed. 104 grams of fat and 104 grams of protein.
Oh my goodness gracious. And let me just tell you,
so you were almost like 32, whatever's left is carbs. Like you were almost exactly 40. A third on everything.
And honestly, I do track my carbohydrates. I aim for less than 100 grams. It's literally the only thing I track. We'll talk about my eating disorder past in a bit, in May when we re-record the eating disorder episode. Mm-hmm. But I'm actually very impressed with this. I eat very intuitively. I just eat when I'm hungry and I try not to eat when I'm not. And I track my carbs only. I don't think too much about salt because I know I get so many fruits and vegetables, but I'm very impressed with this. I was nervous that my like 6 or 7 olives a day would throw me off. That's probably where a lot of my salt came from and my salted cashews.
Oh, yeah.
Love them.
Okay. That is actually very interesting. Tell our listeners what it is you eat every night.
Okay. So I think when I sent this, I was probably, and it is still about the same. A little scoop of ice cream. I typically eat like 6 or 7 green olives. I don't know. It's just something I just love to just put my hand in the jar and take out. And when I say the jar, we buy the giant like Costco brand of olives. Oh, so good. And eat about 6 or 7 olives. And then what else did I put on that list? Maybe some chips.
Yes. A little handful of Trader Joe's chips.
Yes, I like a crunchy snack. So my I wish that they made crunchy olives, and in fact, they kind of do. The food should taste good. Chips that are olive flavored.
Ooh,
it's like eating a crunchy green olive. I'm not even kidding. They are so good.
I'm going to Trader Joe's today, them. And that's an hour away. Those sound
I smart. Don't know if they have them at Trader Joe's.
Oh, it's a Costco thing.
It's a just a. I don't know. I find them at Kroger, Giant Eagle. It's just a general. It's a brand. You could probably get it on Amazon.
What's the brand?
Food again? Should taste good.
Okay.
Yeah. So. Write it down. It's like eating a crunchy olive. Delicious. Hmm. Okay. So what about your diet?
Well, I just thought it was so funny. I felt so judgy when you sent it to me. I was like, do you eat all of those things every night? Like, because it was just so random.
It really is. I know. And it's not like I sit down with a bowl of my little thing of ice cream, my olives, and my chips. I mean, this is what, like, I'll just kind of graze through the night after we eat dinner and, you know, as we're putting the kids to bed. And typically that's what I end up eating, a little bit of ice cream, a few chips, and some olives. Mm-hmm. I'm not mm-hmm. sitting down to those foods necessarily. That would be weird.
That is so funny. My diet is much more traditional, I would say. Probably needs to be more like yours. So my intake of sodium was 2,600 milligrams for the day, so over recommendations. My calorie intake was only 1,705, so pretty low for the day. 222 grams of carbs, so almost double your carb intake, which I would say that's still a pretty appropriate carb intake. That's about,
yeah.
I mean, it's a little over 50% of my intake.
Yeah.
If I'm doing my
perfect.
Math. Perfect. Yeah, about that. 62 grams of fat, which is a little low, I would say, and mm-hmm. 88 grams of protein. So I remember that day I did have a sandwich at lunch with packaged lunch meat, not the deli stuff, but actual packaged lunch meat, as well as I had a little bit of light mayo on my sandwich and mustard. And I was telling my coworkers at lunch that we were doing this and that I was recording it because I wanted to tabulate it later. And she was like, well, mustard's like just a freebie. It doesn't have sodium. And I was like, oh, yes, it does.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So.
But not a lot. It's probably one of the, because it has that vinegar in it, mm-hmm. which vinegar actually kind of helps. If you're trying to lower your salt, using vinegar actually kind of replaces that salt flavor. So since mustard has so much vinegar, it doesn't need as much salt to taste good.
Yeah.
So compared to things like barbecue sauce and ketchup, it's actually pretty low, but sure. definitely still has sodium. You can't consider it a sodium-free condiment.
Well, yeah, and together with the mayonnaise. I mean, it was definitely a high-sodium lunch for sure, but mm-hmm. I think I had carrots that day and I think like grapes. So
okay.
Even though the sandwich was high, it was probably 500 milligrams and it was on a sandwich thin. I mean, it's probably more than that. Maybe it was 600, 700. I don't know. But my breakfast the day had been pretty, you know, very low. And, you know, I don't know. It all kind of evened itself out. So I'm trying to remember if I exercised that day, because I would say that's a pretty moderate to low calorie intake for me.
Yeah, that is pretty low.
Well, I am forever trying to lose weight, but it just.
Yeah. But oh my gosh. That's. Can you hear the kids in the background right now?
Yeah, a little bit.
Kind of. Note to self, for the next time we podcast, I will move to another side of our bedroom.
You're so funny.
Paige has a friend over right now, so I think that we can hear them chatting or arguing downstairs. Okay, so.
We haven't all right, done the whole friend over thing yet.
Well, okay, when I say friend over, he's our neighbor. He was literally here at 8 o'clock knocking on the door, which. You know, you can argue that that's annoying, but it was also really sweet because they generally play really well together. And Paige loves it when he comes over. So she's in heaven right now. Although I think usually they can only last about an hour to an hour and a half before they want to just like
chew
each other's. Yeah, exactly.
Walk.
Go back home.
Okay, I'm going to watch you walk back home. Just yeah. cut across the lawn there, bud. You're all right. That's so
fun. Yeah, and it's fun. It's good to have him as a neighbor. They generally play pretty well.
You know,
I know, with neighbors and friends in the neighborhood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just walk over to their house, knock on the door, see what's up.
It's like the good old days.
I had that when I was growing up, so I'm glad she does too.
Yeah, that's cute.
Okay, so let's go into let's kind of, I feel like we should end the podcast with our two favorite tips for how to reduce sodium in our diet and our kids' diet. What do you think?
I think the first one that comes to mind for me anyway is just to compare foods of different, I don't know, like similar products, basically. So, for example, if you're going to include frozen pizza in your life, which most of us probably will at some point, compare them. Look at, and don't necessarily look at just the, you have to look at the whole thing. So what is the serving size? Is it one piece, two piece, a third of the pizza, a quarter of the pizza? And then looking at the sodium from there. So kind of doing a bang for your buck type of assessment versus just looking at the amount of sodium and moving on. There's just a little bit more to that. And I think the other thing I see, especially with condiments, is if you're not like, okay, I'll be honest, like when it comes to ranch, I am very wed to Hidden Valley. Like there, to me, there's like no other ranch in the world.
Yeah. I like Hidden Valley.
It's so good. I'm sorry. There's nothing else that compares. And so I am, but other than ranch, I would say I am pretty flexible when it comes to like ketchup varieties or whatever. So look at, often I would say the generic version is going to be a little bit lower in sodium than the brand name. And that's not a steadfast rule, but compare similar products. So whether it's beans or canned vegetables or condiments, just kind of compare those things and see where they land. So
yeah,
they're not all made equal, even if they say low sodium or no salt added or blah, 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 blah. Just look a little further.
I like that. Something else I like to do. So when I do buy frozen meals or frozen pizza for my family, again, it comes back to I always think, how can I make this better for my family and me? Mm-hmm. I always add something like canned mushrooms and fresh spinach to frozen pizzas. I'll basically cook it until it's almost done. And then maybe for like the last 5 minutes, I'll add just a giant handful of spinach. It's just adding the potassium to, again, counteract the salt. But that's not the only reason I do it. I mean, spinach has so many other benefits. That's something I try to do with most processed foods, even, you know, things like mac and cheese. I will throw in broccoli to the mac and cheese. And I don't buy the Velveeta shells and cheese with broccoli because it's literally like probably a teaspoon of broccoli in the total container. My mom used to buy that for me. I was like, sure, I'll eat this. I mean, it was barely any broccoli. But I'll actually put whole things of broccoli in there. And generally, they accept that well.
What about peas in your broccoli? Will they do that?
Peas in mac and cheese, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I say broccoli. Sorry.
Not peas in my broccoli. I don't think they'd dig that.
Sorry.
Peas like, would be another good one. Yeah. Like that's easy.
I'll add frozen peas to the boiling water just as, you know, it's got a minute or two left of cooking. And sometimes that's a easy option for the weekend.
I think that they'd probably accept that better than broccoli, actually, to be honest. They do love peas.
Because it's similar in size. And if you put enough in there, they just like lose interest in picking them out. And they're like, fine, I'll just eat it.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's probably got more potassium than broccoli, honestly, I feel like, because it's a legume. It's so good call. Another thing I wanted to throw out there, two more things. So one is another way to add sodium or to add salt without salt. So to add that sodium flavor without adding actual salt. Oh boy, here comes Cameron. This is embarrassing. is to add vinegar or lime juice. So the vinegar and the lime juice kind of act similar to salt when you add it to foods. And that was in this book as well, this Taste What You're Missing. So vinegar, lime juice, any type of vinegar. I mean, it can be red wine vinegar, balsamic vinegar. And then, again, that citrus, something like lime or lemon. Those are two things that you can add to foods that kind of gives that same taste as salt. And then lastly, I want to say the difference between sea salt, kosher salt, and table salt. We didn't really hit on that. Do you want to hit on that real quick while I cover my mic because Cameron is screaming my name?
You are so funny. Yeah. So I'm scrolling back up to my notes here. So the difference between sea salt and table salt, and this is such a common misunderstanding. People believe that sea salt is lower in sodium and or kosher salt, things like that. So the difference between them is just how the two salts are produced. And so sea salt and regular salt both come from salted bodies of water, where sea salt is produced when salt water evaporates and regular table salt comes from mining underground salt deposits.
Okay. So they both have the same amount of sodium. Yes. But if you compare a teaspoon of regular salt, table salt, to a teaspoon of kosher salt or the coarse ground salt, sea salt, there's going to be less per teaspoon of the sea salt, less sodium. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about it, it's actually less salt in there. If you grind it down to a fine salt, like the table salt, it would actually end up being less than a teaspoon in there. So teaspoon for teaspoon, sure, you're going to have less sodium in that sea salt or kosher salt. But gram for gram, they're the exact same. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about, like, if you took, I don't know, rocks and put them in a mason jar, you would say, and you filled it to the top, you would say it's full. And then if you took sand and kind of poured it over the top, it would fill in all the gaps. So kind of think exactly. of the grind, that coarseness, really, it's the weight of it, not the physical amount. Is that right. a good way of saying it?
I think so. I absolutely agree with that.
But that's a very common misunderstanding. And same thing for like the Himalayan salts and things like that. Those are more touted for their medicinal properties and kind of their non-nutritive something or others. And there's so many out there now. And at the end of the day, they're all salt. So find one that you like and all that. So, okay, what's your mom win?
Okay, so we're going to end our podcast with a mom win. My mom win was being a basically an educated consumer today or this week at my doctor's office. So it was actually at the urgent care. I brought Cameron to the urgent care because I thought he had an ear infection. Even though he has tubes in his ears, he hasn't had an ear infection since he got those tubes. But I was pretty sure he did, and it turns out he does. She wrote up a prescription for an antibiotic once again. He's been on like 7 rounds of antibiotic in his 2 years on Earth, which I think is just sad. And I just asked, you know, do you think I have to give this to him? And she was very clear with me. She said, no, you don't have to give it to him. You know, give it a couple weeks. If you can, you know, make his pain better with Advil, Tylenol off and on for a couple weeks, and he doesn't get a fever or you don't see any liquid coming out of his ear, don't give it to him. And so it's been a week, and I think it's finally going away, and I have not given him the antibiotics. So I'm really hoping that it ends up being that it goes away on its own, and I don't have to give him, you know, his 8th round of amoxicillin. It's sitting in my fridge ready just in case, because I don't want him to be in immense pain. I know how terrible ear infections feel. I've had them as an adult, and they're awful. So that's my mom win, just being an informed consumer and patient and just asking questions. And I think if I had just accepted it and taken the antibiotic, he'd be on it right now. And granted, he'd probably be in less pain, and I wouldn't have to give him the Advil and Tylenol, but it's, again, another round of antibiotics. I just really didn't want to have to put him on unless he really had to. So that was my mom win.
Yeah, and it's hard to do that because you both want relief at that. You know, when when your kid's miserable, you're miserable, and in that moment, the easiest thing to do is probably just give the antibiotics. But, the long term, ugh. We won't go there. I'm so there. Shay has tubes as well. So, okay, my mom win is very closely related to today's topic. This happened like a week ago about. So we're really trying to get in all of our Brussels sprouts because they're still in season. One perk of winter, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I don't even remember what else I had roasted them with, but some other vegetable or two. And that was served actually alongside dinner. Couldn't tell you what dinner was that night. But my kids wanted a separate plate of only Brussels sprouts. Both of them were just inhaling them. My food is sitting there getting cold as I'm plucking these roasted Brussels sprouts off the pan. And nice. They were salted, but they devoured them. And I just...
Oh, I love it.
I was like, yes. So...
Good. That's huge, fantastic.
Huge mom win, because they're... A little, I think that's why I go with the one pot delights, I call them, because the vegetables, once they're all mixed in there with the meat and pasta or whole grain or whatever's in there, they're a little too, they won't pick them out as easily, but they did in that. Right. They did in that case. So anyway.
Nice. I know. Brussels sprouts, I'm telling you, it's like the new broccoli for kids, because, you know, every kid loves broccoli, I feel like. I know that's not true, but it seems to me that most kids really will eat broccoli out of all the vegetables. And I feel like more and more I'm hearing parents say, since they're learning how to actually cook Brussels sprouts, that their kids will eat Brussels sprouts too. I mean, when I was growing up, I feel like I got these slimy, nasty, like steamed or boiled Brussels sprouts that are disgusting.
Yeah.
But if you roast them, it's like they take on a whole new flavor. So they do. Awesome.
They do.
All right, let's wrap this up because I feel like Cameron is crawling up the stairs right now and going to devour me. And
I'm with you. So find us on Facebook, find us on Instagram, Dietitian's Dish Podcast. And shoot us an email, dietitiansdishpodcast@gmail.com. And Gina and I will see you in a couple weeks.
Oh, yeah. Wait, real quick. Write us a review as well. And I think I want to start doing what Food in Session podcast does and read our good reviews on our podcast, because I just think that's so fun. They call it Review the Review. And a really good podcast to listen to is called Food in Session. It's a chef and a dietitian. They're just really funny, and they have a lot of great personality and with great topics that they discuss, I think, every week.
Yeah, I love them too. And yeah, she has a bulldog.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You told me that. That's another thing you love about them. I forgot about that. I forget the name of the dog. But anyway, they're fun.
She has a couple, I think.
Does
yeah,
she?
Awesome. Yeah, we'll do some Review the Reviewer. So be sure to write us, not only rate our podcast, but also write us a review, and we will give you that shout out on the podcast.
And we'll see you next time for our podcast on healthy meals in a hurry and kind of like what we do for quick lunches, dinners, breakfasts, etc., that are healthier but also don't take too much time. So,
yeah. Love it.
Looking forward to it.
See you in a couple weeks, Gina.
Nicole. All right. Bye.
Thank you for listening for the podcast. Bye-bye.